everybody can hear this. It's basically for a phone call.
They say that heaven is 10 zillion light years away. And just the pure at heart will walk a righteous street someday. They say that heaven is 10 zillion light years away. What if there is a God? We need him now. That's what my friends ask me, and I say it's taken him so long, 'cause we've got so far to come. Tell me, people, why can't they say that hate is 10 zillion light years away? Why can't the light of good shine God's love in every soul? Why must my color black make me a lesser man? I thought this world was made for every man. Loves us all. That's what my God tells me, and I say it's taken him so long, 'cause we've got so far to come. But in my heart I can if so, let her be pure at heart, just to walk her righteous streets, I pray. Let God's love shine within to save our evil souls. For those who don't believe will never see the light. Where is my God? He lives inside of me, and I say it's taken him so long.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. A lovely day, even though it's foggy and voggy and all, but we'll get through it. Anyway, this morning we're going to have a pretty good conversation on plastics and all kinds of plastics. Plastics has conquered the world as we know it today. And I have with me Miss Suzanne Fraser and Dean Otsuki, who are with the Beach Environmental Awareness Campaign, or short for BEACH, B-E-A-C-H. And I know many of you go out to the beaches and you see the plastics and you see the ropes that have drifted up and the cargo nets and all. And what happens to all of that? Bottle caps, paper cups, styrofoam, you name it. But what actually happened to, let's say, the ropes? They come ashore, find themselves broken up into the rocks along the shore there, and grinding from the sand, and those plastic fibers go right into the sand and right in back into the environment through either being consumed by fish or by plants or something. So we're going to hopefully have a good discussion on that. And if you have any questions, 524-1080 is the number. Good morning, Suzanne and Dean. How are you?
Good morning, Carol. Thank you very much for having us on the show, and aloha to all the listeners out there.
Yeah. Dean?
Aloha.
So tell us a little bit about this effort, your organization, Beach, first.
Yes, we, Dean and I, co-founded Beach Environmental Awareness Campaign Hawaii, or Beach, 10 years ago in 2006, for the purpose of bringing awareness and solutions to the major environmental problem of plastic marine debris. And how we do that is through environmental education in schools and the community, mm-hmm. marine debris removal and research, and plastic reduction litter prevention. And our aim is to get people inspired to take action on the individual, the community, and the government level to change what they're doing mm-hmm. and help reduce and prevent plastic mm-hmm. marine debris mm-hmm. so that we can stop this problem. So our work right now is focusing a lot on not just removing the debris from the shoreline, but processing it and sorting it out and working out and identifying the types, amounts, and sources so that we can identify specific solutions.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds good. Yeah, that's what we do. That's what we're doing right now, the big project that we're doing right now in Kaneohe. So a lot of hard work. We'd like to have some more volunteers out there help us out. That'd be great.
And what is it that you do? You volunteers and the public, you get public help, you work with schools and whatever, you have cleanups or what have you, or programs that they sign up to?
Yes, we volunteers work with us in a number of different ways. Right now, we really need volunteers to help sort the plastics that we've accumulated and doing our study.
Mm-hmm.
It's really educational for the volunteers because they go through like an educational presentation first before and learn about the plastics and the garbage patch and different things like that about that. And also, then after that, then they go through the activity of helping us sort the plastics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we're sorting both microplastic and macro. So we're sorting the 5 millimeters and smaller is the micro size, and macro is the larger sizes. Mm-hmm. And as Dean said, it's a very educational and transformational experience because many people have not been out on those types of beaches that have marine debris. It's mostly found on the windward side from Hanama Bay to Kahuku on Oahu, and mostly windward shorelines on other islands, such as Camillo Beach on the Big Island, which is known as the world's dirtiest beach. That's about 7 miles north of South Point.
Mm-hmm.
And the plastic, when we went in 2007, was 1 foot deep. So mm-hmm. the sand was underneath the plastic. So when you're walking along the shoreline, instead of getting sand in your shoes, you're getting plastic in your shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, the world's dirtiest beach, give us a little insight about, is it that we created that, we being the state of Hawaii, or what is the origin of much of this plastic?
Yeah, so our organization differentiates between beachgoer trash and marine debris.
Mm-hmm.
And our major focus is marine debris, but we do sometimes do the beachgoer trash. So beachgoer trash is stuff that's generated here, mm-hmm. such as cigarette butts and lolly wrappers, and or you call them candy wrappers here. I'm Australian, so I use a different language. And styrofoam plates and plastic bags, things like that. But the mm-hmm. marine debris is a whole different kettle of fish. It's what's out in the ocean. It got there from various ways around the Asia-Pacific basin, from shoreline activities, from boating, from shipping, from cruise ships, from military. There's just a whole lot of different sources of marine debris, and that's mm-hmm. the stuff that's washing up from the ocean and onto the shoreline.
Mm-hmm.
So Camillo Beach and Kahuku Beach, these types of places that are getting large accumulations, are very isolated areas that hardly anybody goes to, and this is coming directly out of the ocean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I have learned that a great bit of it, what percentage is probably minuscule, but a large percentage of it that we see locally here, other than those beaches, a lot of it is dumped in unintentionally or through daily activities of people into our streams and our backyards. You go to various Manoa, for example, people throw the trash over the fence. You go to Waianae, Nanakuli. We've actually done stories where we actually capture them on video throwing bags of trash, plastics, into the stream, and that then in turn washes down. So
that's exactly what happens. Not all marine debris and things that you see out in the environment, of course, are deliberately littered, but a good percentage, mm-hmm. I'd say majority is. But yes, there's trash that gets into the stream, whether people put it directly in it or they might drop things out the car window and it goes down a storm drain and into that stream.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, Hawaii's definitely contributing to this problem as well. We do find some items on the shoreline that are marine debris that we can identify directly from Hawaii.
And I, having traveled to Midway, for example, in the channel, on the outer islands, what you find there is quite interesting, and why people should become concerned, not just because we're concerned that it may impact humans down the up the food chain from the little fish being eaten by the bigger fish, and then we eat the bigger fish and ingest some of those constituents. But put that aside, birds, for example, we won't talk about the fish. We know they can ingest it indirectly or directly. But birds, the albatross, for example, floating cigarette lighters that have that glistening piece of shiny material on it or just bobbing up and down, looks like food, it's ingested. Soap caps, sports mm-hmm. drinks cap. What is the danger of that, immediate danger or threat to birds that we, the average person, wouldn't consider or have knowledge of?
Well, the albatross, they go out and forage for food on the open ocean, and they mistake the plastic for the natural food, and they fly back to their nest and feed it to their chicks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the albatross, you know, the baby ones, they mm-hmm. if they make it to fledging stage, well, before they start fledging, they have to throw up a bolus.
Mm-hmm.
And most of it's full of plastics that scientists have found, and you can see it all over the. I'm sure you've seen that, Carol, on the sand or on the beach. And the ones that don't or they can't, you know, they end up dying from like dehydration or
starvation.
Starvation, exactly.
And blockages.
And blockages, mm-hmm. exactly.
Now, on some occasions I've witnessed the cavity of the young in the nest. With just a carcass left, and you'll find toothbrushes, mm-hmm. you'll find bottle caps in the cavity of this animal or this mm-hmm. bird, young bird, and so the parents can come back and feed it, but there's no room, and because it can't expel the toothbrush, the big lighters, or all kinds of things, or slipper foam, and all of that, depending on. So what you find is this. Several dead birds, young, that never get to fledge, and they mm-hmm. dehydration, starvation,
blockage.
Choking, blockage.
Yeah.
How do we stop that, or how do we sort of have the public, the general public, to take the onus or take the responsibility mm-hmm. of that? Why can't we?
Well, the first thing is that, I mean, to begin with, it's an enormous tragedy. I mean, it's devastating to see those photographs and horrifying to know that it's actually 250,000 dead baby albatrosses mm-hmm. every year mm-hmm. in the northwestern Hawaiian Islands dying with plastic in mm-hmm. their stomachs. I mean, that's an incredibly huge amount of birds.
Yeah.
And what we've done to help raise awareness of the fact that this is happening is we started a project several years ago to raise awareness through recycling plastic caps and lids. Mm-hmm. And the purpose was not for the actual recycling part, it was to the raise awareness of the small plastics that are so harmful to these seabirds. Mm-hmm. And so through that project, we went into schools and community groups and educated them about the albatross plight, and then got them to take action by recycling the caps. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, what we need people to do is stop drinking out of the plastic water bottles, because then you don't have the plastic cap, then you don't need to recycle the plastic cap. And the biggest thing that we're telling people, because sometimes they don't care about a seabird or a monk seal or an animal or whatever, but they might care about their own health, or if they don't care about their health, they might care about the next generation's health. So we really plug into the chemical issue, because plastic water bottles contain the chemical antimony, and that's a cancer-causing chemical which leaches into the water when heat is applied, mm-hmm. which happens when these bottles are shipped from the mainland and stuck on the dock and outside the store and on the truck. These bottles are getting heated up all the time. And so we're teaching people about not using plastic water bottles anymore, mm-hmm. and then you don't have the cap problem, and then you're not harming seabirds.
You know, back in the early 90s, one trip that it was so sad to see, and I learned something that from that trip, one of those trips, and that was government agencies have yet to adopt, many of them, the full impact or be fully concerned with that. I mean, they on the fringe, they will deal with it. I collected 5 boxes of plastics in the 90s, and proceeded to send them to the Ashland, Oregon forensic lab. Here's one of the problems that we were faced with. Well, first of all, it's out of your purview, number one. Number two, we can't say that these products, oil products, that's what the plastics generally are, unless mm-hmm. are contributing to the death. The oil companies would have a fit if we were to try to make that link, even though they had. These are plastics materials made from petroleum that gives off the constituents as they're broken up and ingested and whatever. And so I think why we are having this dilemma where we find ourselves today is that the agencies has not grasped and digested the impact.
Well, here's the thing. It's pretty aggravating that in the U.S., the plastics industry, oil industry, chemical industries are just so big and so controlling that they seem to have somehow managed to make sure that government agencies never make that link, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. By they're always denying, oh, no, the seabirds aren't dying from plastic ingestion. They're dying from lead paint or something. Like, mm-hmm. there's always some other excuse. But, here's the but, elsewhere in the world, they are making the link. Mm-hmm. So in Australia, there's a sea turtle researcher who is saying that plastic bags are killing sea turtles. Mm-hmm. So she's making that link. They're making the link in other places in their mm-hmm. research. So if the U.S. wants to keep denying it, well, they're just going to get behind, because the rest of the world is going to be saying, no, no, no. Plastic really is killing these animals.
Yeah, actually, the U.S. is in the forefront. They have knowledge, and they know the impact. I mean, they know themselves. If they were to swallow mm-hmm. a Hostess Twinkie wrapper themselves, humans, it would be problems.
Oh, yeah, I'm not saying they don't know it. I'm saying they don't want to admit it. Like,
well,
it's a cover-up.
I understand. They're scientists. They know.
They know, but they don't want to say.
They just, for some reason, big money and the influence. And so that brings me to the next point or question. So our local government here, this morning, I noticed you usually have this glow about you, this nice calm, but you look red today out of frustration. And what's the article say this morning?
Senator Scholl phone ban proposal.
So what does that mean? I mean, you know, the funny part about it is here in the state, we have so much discussion of Environmental Solutions.
Yeah, that's all we do is talk about it.
They make their way up through the front door of the legislators, and boy, they entertain us with, oh, they're going to do this, a bottle bill, bag bill. And then when you look at the back end of it, the bills are just washed out, or if they, if they're even passed, they're conflicting. They do more harm than good than what they started off to.
Right. I mean, we have been at this for 10-plus years. We've been going down to the Capitol for that long trying to get a phone bill passed, a plastic bag ban passed. They have only passed one bill since our organization started at the state, and that bill was banning smoking at beaches and parks statewide, which was one of our initiatives, and we're really glad it passed because cigarette butts are made of plastic, of course, so that's, and they're one of the most littered plastic items, so that was a very good thing. But one bill in 10 years, I don't think that's good enough. And in the paper, one of the senators is quoted as saying that it takes 5 to 6 years for a good bill to pass.
Who's that senator?
That's Senator Gabbard. But, you know, the thing is, and I've heard him say that before, but the thing is, this is not the first time that a polystyrene foam or styrofoam bill has come up. We saw styrofoam bills back 10 years ago, 9 years ago, 8 years ago. It's been a very, very long time waiting for them to pass this. It took over an hour to go through all the testimony, even just to read all the 600 and so names at the hearing the other day. It took over an hour, and there were so many people there, they had to get everyone up and who wasn't testifying on that bill and asked them to leave the room so that all the people waiting outside could come in and do their testimony. And imagine if they leave this bill again till next year. It'll probably take several hours to get through all the testimony. I mean, when are they going to pass this bill?
Yeah, and there's so many, well, when they say it takes 5 to 6 to 7 years to
Five to six years.
Yeah. That's if it's plastics or the environment are going to impact a business, a company. But if it's going to give them salary increases and better benefits, they'll pass a bill in a session. Isn't that funny?
Of course they could. Yeah,
yeah.
Of course.
And but so where do we go to get them, them being government officials, to take this thing serious? Because we're killing ourselves quietly. We may not appreciate what people are saying. Maybe it's the same kind of chorus. There's global warming. No, it's not. You know, it's not global warming. We still have fish.
Oh, there's definitely garbage patch deniers. I mean, a former city council member, when we went in to see the city council about a plastic bag ban, and he straight told us that the garbage patch didn't exist. And, you know, I mean, that's just crazy because we've been picking this stuff up off shorelines like millions of pieces at a time, literally. I mean, on Camillo Beach in one cleanup over 2 days, Dean and I removed over 4 million pieces of plastic off that shoreline. So, you know, this is an overwhelming, enormous issue that can't be just pushed under the rug continuously, and the responsibility lies on not only individuals to stop using all this plastic, but it relies on government officials to pass the laws necessary to take action before it's too late. And we've been struggling to get that message across. We work as hard as we can, but we can't do everything, and it has to be time for the government to step up and do what's right.
Yeah, I totally agree. Government definitely needs to do a lot more for the public. I mean, we pay them in city taxes, so I mean, just the fact that people litter so much, you see litter on the freeways all the time. You know, in other countries, I know they have commercials or public announcements, you know, about littering. You know, please don't litter, pick up your trash, or whatever. It's just so basic, and I mean, it's not that difficult to do, and I think the public would have more respect for government officials if they would start doing things like that for the people.
Well, and I also want to emphasize, though, because this is how the plastics industry and other industries try to wiggle out of any bill, is they always want to say this is about littering. This is about our lack of littering laws or not enforcing them or whatever. It's not just about littering. it's about having these items available in the first place, because what I have witnessed time after time is plastic bags blowing out of city refuse trucks on the highway. Mm-hmm. I've seen stuff blowing out of the back of people's pickup trucks. I've seen people delving through rubbish bins at beach parks looking for high five recyclables, and a styrofoam box comes out, or a plastic bag blows out, or a picnic table, a bag blows off the table. So it's just, you've got to not have these items available in the first place, mm-hmm. so that they can't get into the environment, whether deliberately or not deliberately, so that you're not harming marine life. Mm-hmm. And the bottom line is that everything plastic has chemicals in it, and those chemicals are wreaking havoc in invertebrates worldwide. It's not just a problem with dirty beaches and aesthetic problems. We're talking about major extinction of species, because the endocrine-disrupting chemicals that get into the base of the food chain are then passed through the food chain. It may not be that you open up a fish and see a piece of plastic. You need to go have that fish chemically tested, the tissues of it, to find out, does it contain dioxins? Does it have DDT or DDE? Does it have PCBs? Is this safe to eat? You know, that's what we're talking about here. And the problem is that endocrine-disrupting chemicals cause things like feminization of male species, with male fish turning to female fish, or growing female parts like egg sacs, or an imbalance in the sex ratio balance in the Inuit people in the Arctic. You've got a study going on there where they found that there were twice as many girl babies being born than boys, and in one village, only girls and no boys. Mm-hmm. So this is even evident in human populations, that we're headed for an extinction of species, and we're already in the sixth mass extinction event, the Anthropocene, caused by humans, and one of those major components of that is plastic pollution.
Mm-hmm. This is the Carol Cox Show you're listening to, and my guest is Ms. Suzanne Fraser and Mr. Dean Otsuki of BEACH, and that is the BEACH Environmental Awareness Campaign. What or how does someone contact you, and you want to give a phone number out and invite them? You were soliciting, hoping to get help here and there, so
give us
some contact information, websites and all.
Yeah, we need two things right now. We need help with volunteering, and we need help with donations. So if you'd like to do either of those or join up and become a member, we have a website. It's beachwithdashes.org. So I'm going to read that out, beachwithdashes.org. And you can also contact us by phone, which is 393-2168.
Mm-hmm. So I got some of your posters here, and a lot of things just in the normal use. Remember the old glass balls?
Yeah.
Now, that's okay, but then that glass, too, had lead in. So there's always a downside to some of this. But the plastic balls, we find them on the beach broken up and just laying there in the sun, brittle, causing them to brittle, and the action scouring against the rocks as the waves pluck them back and forth. What do we do with that? And as a reason to try and jump to the next subject, keep that in mind. What does our state agencies here do, and our federal agencies? Have they reached out to you? And I know there's really one sensitive subject, is the IUCN. And I'll let you talk about the IUCN, and they had a humongous gathering. I call it an expensive party, you know, and we still have all of these problems environmentally, and yet you can't get a game warden to respond timely or respond at all, and yet they're having an $8 million party for the rest of the world to come to see what...
Well, we had to start our nonprofit. We weren't one of these people who just wanted to create a job for ourselves or something like that and wanted to start a nonprofit. And we don't even get paid. Like, for the past 12 years, neither of us have been paid anything.
Mm-hmm.
So we work as volunteers. But the frustrating thing was that no government agency would take responsibility for mm-hmm. marine debris.
Mm-hmm.
I rang everything to do with ocean, coastal, water, you name it, of DNLR when we first saw marine debris on Waimanalo Beach back in 2005. And I just got shifted from one to the other, to the other, to the other, and then to the city, and then back to the military, and then to the state. And nobody in mm-hmm. any government agency wanted to take responsibility for marine debris. Then we tried nonprofits, thinking that they would help, and we organized cleanups under their umbrellas and tried to get them involved, and they weren't interested in that either. So after a year of doing all of that, we decided that the only way to tackle this was to head on, was start a nonprofit. And you would think that we would get a lot of help, you know, when we need it, you know, from different agencies. But it's been extremely frustrating
mm-hmm.
because when I have called up state departments and said, could we please put some recycle bins at the harbors to stop this problem of people digging through the trash bins and then it flying out to sea, they wouldn't allow it. When I've called the city and said the same thing, they wouldn't allow it. And we had to, like, almost twist their arm to let us do, well, they finally said, okay, you can put them in five beaches. But if people out there are listening and wondering why there's no recycle bins at some of these beach parks, that's why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's just one example. Of course, legislation, we've been discussing things not passing, same thing at the city level. You know, and a big thing happened with the whole Fukushima. And we had tsunami debris to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the possibility of radiation.
Mm-hmm.
And we started ringing around government agencies again. Whose responsibility is this? Who's going to come out and test the beaches? And all this sort of a thing, and they wouldn't do any of it. So then you get to IUCN, and we got invited by one of the house reps who said, you know, I really think you should play a major role at this, and wrote us a nice letter to the state about it,
mm-hmm.
and so on. And we thought, great, this will be an enormous opportunity to raise awareness of this problem internationally at this event. And then nothing happened, and we got left out. And, you know, we went along there and saw that IUCN looked like a tourism show. Like, there was hardly any photographs or anything showing the horror of marine debris. Like, you were talking about albatrosses, dead carcasses. There was nothing like that seen at IUCN that
mm-hmm.
we could see.
And listening to you talk about liking money or support, there was $1 million given to the Department of Land and Natural Resources. Some say it's reported that it's by the Japanese government mm-hmm. for tsunami waste.
That's right.
I FOIA those records because I was informed that they were so desperate to spend the money, they didn't have any projects to spend it on, so they were basically giving people flights from Boston and other places to come here to do other projects. And it's sad to hear that you were rejected. And for me personally, I didn't want to participate because it would contradict what I'm saying. I think it was an excessive and abuse of the people's money for nothing, and the only people that profit from that or benefited from it was the nonprofits that were leading the charge on that effort. Because if it was to get money some say, well, it's going to benefit the tourism, but the DLNR is not the Hawaii Tourist Authority.
Mm-hmm. What was annoying was that the Japanese government gave several $1 million, I think it was $5 or $6 million, and each of the five or so states got about $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
Only 50,000 of that $1 million trickled down to nonprofits.
Mm-hmm.
And they were made to do a grant application, and we looked at the grant application. It was one of the worst we've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
It was basically written like, you know, you're not allowed to do this, you're not allowed to do that, and it was a reimbursement grant, and if you do anything that embarrassed the state in
right.
any way, then they would not reimburse the money. And
mm-hmm.
so we thought, well, if we use that money for Geiger counters and hazmat suits,
mm-hmm.
and someone takes a photograph of us covered in a hazmat suit, then are they going to say that's embarrassing the state and ruining tourism and all this and wouldn't give us the money back? So we knew not to apply for that. But what a piddly amount of money, $50,000 to clean the shoreline, and then they wasted it on a helicopter aerial survey or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the thing is that at the Marine Debris Conference, how many years ago was that? The last Marine Debris Conference after Fukushima, there was a PowerPoint presentation given a couple of times with a guy from DLNR on Makapu Beach removing one piece of tsunami debris. It was like a crate, and
mm-hmm.
he was dressed in hazmat gear from head to toe.
Right.
So they won't even put their own guys on those beaches without proper gear. And yet there's all these volunteers going out on shorelines without gloves, without Geiger counters, without any protection at all. And that shouldn't be happening.
Mm-hmm. And then they boast about finding a fishing pontoon, a skiff, that they were going to return back to Japan. Because it had, you know, what that suggests is that the real concern for the environment is lacking.
Mm-hmm.
And many have learned to stroke the underbelly and get the money. And then to prevent anything being productive, they won't do any outreach to you or to other organizations. You got to be in the groove with them. You got to be of that ilk to get the money. And with the promise that you won't do anything to embarrass the government.
You're spot on. That's exactly right. If you're not in the in crowd and doing what they want you to do and say, then you don't get support. And we are not being manipulated like that.
Mm-hmm.
We're not playing that game.
Mm-hmm.
At the moment, down in the city, there's a Bill 59. That supposedly was brought in to close up all those loopholes in our pathetic plastic bag law at the moment. You know how that people are using thick bags and bags for food and drinks and all this. Instead of pushing that bill through and strengthening it and making sure those loopholes get closed, they've now got the food industry, the retail industry, and a couple of non-profits,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to name them
mm-hmm.
because we're furious that what they're saying, what the city council members are saying is that all the environmentalists are for this bill. That's not true. The ones who are being manipulated, who are being part of the system, Surf Rider and Sierra Club, are joining forces with the people who want to keep bags. And they're trying to pass a 10-cent bag fee bill now, which I think is a complete distraction from the purpose of the bill in the first place, which is close the loopholes and stop the plastic bags in the first place.
Yeah.
So we don't participate in that silly nonsense. It happens all the time. And we often find ourselves on a different side of things from Surf Rider because they often want to just pass anything, and we want to pass a real bill. That's going to really make a difference, and it's going to really ban plastic bags or stop smoking on all beaches or whatever it is.
Mm.
Or even the microbead bill at the state had all kinds of loopholes, and they were supporting it and we didn't, and we had to end up killing that bill.
Mm.
So we don't get manipulated like that. We work independently, and if that means we have less funding, so be it. We struggle, but at least we keep our integrity and do what's right.
I noticed the high five and the plastic bag bill seems to be patterned after one another, the 10 cent and you pay that at the counter and then but you don't get it back.
No, and it's failing because Don Quixote has been handing out plastic bags for 10 cents for nearly 2 years now. And we have picked up a whole bunch of those yellow plastic bags, the thick ones, the new ones that people paid 10 cents for. So, you know, the argument is, oh, if you charge 10 cents, it's going to reduce the number of plastic bags and people are going to bring reusable bags. Mm-hmm. That's not going to happen here. We've got an island state. We've got a tourism economy. And you can't make all the tourists from all over the world bring the reusable bags. I mean, it would be nice if they did, but the reality is they're going to be purchasing things here and ending up with a bag given to them and charging 10 cents when they're paying $4 for an airport cart at the airport for 12 minutes or 10 minutes or however long they use the airport cart, $4. They're just going to pay the 10 cents for the bag and throw it out later.
Mm-hmm. And these bags, once they're in the ocean or in the environment, the sun breaks them down and then you have them, they become degraded and just falls into the environment. Now the plants take it up. Or it washes off into the streams from runoff. You would think our legislators would educate themselves. I mean, many of them pride themselves of being lawyers and having an education, right? But some of this is so elementary that it escapes them. But I think it's about the politics and the lobby.
It's always about businesses and what the businesses want.
Right.
But you know what's so crazy is that one of the businesses against the plastic bag ban is ABC stores. And I walked into an ABC store deliberately in Waikiki to find out if they're pushing reusable bags or not. And I couldn't find them. So I went up to the counter and I asked the man, do you have any reusable bags in your store? And he said, oh, I think we do. And then he proceeded to wander around the store with me trying to find them. And they were down the back of the store somewhere behind something. And when I saw them, they were so expensive. They were like $16 or something. I mean, who's going to buy a bag for $16?
That says probably with their label on it, logo on it.
I don't remember what it had on it, but I was just kind of disgusted. First, that you couldn't find them. Second, that they were too expensive. Third, that they were hidden, you know. And so I said, look, do you have anything cheaper? And so I said, what about those other bags? And I kind of described the cheaper bags. And he said, oh, we might have some of those. And so we went up to the front of the store this time, behind the counter, underneath all this pile of junk, and in a box underneath everything, he pulled out like a $3 or $4 bag. And I was like, why don't you have these right at the cashier so that you're encouraging people to choose this? But they're not even making an effort. In Australia, when there was this big push to ban plastic bags and all the stores were saying, no, 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 we're going to try something else. We're going to try reusable bags. When you checked out there, you didn't get asked, do you want paper or plastic? You got asked, do you have your green bag today? And when I first got asked that, because I was visiting and, you know, I didn't know this change had happened, and this is years ago, like 2002 or something, and I looked at the girl and I said, green bag? What do you mean green bag? And she pointed behind her. They had them all up on the wall, and yeah, they were green. And so I went, oh, yeah, okay, I'll have three of those. But they actually encourage it and suggest to customers that they bring their bags and things like that. Mm-hmm. But that is not happening here, and it is not going to be a hardship to these stores. In fact, Whole Foods has told us on more than one occasion that one of their biggest sellers is reusable bags. And so really the stores who aren't on that are missing out on a big market. There should be this whole competition going on here. Who's got the best reusable bag with the nicest logo of Hawaii on it that people can take back home as a souvenir? I mean, they could be making a pile of money out of this. You know.
But they spend more money protecting the industry.
Oh,
and
totally.
And diverting responsibility. And so you and myself and others are charging up the hill, and we have no clue as to support. You first of all have got to go out and rally and get support from one legislator just to beg them to introduce a sensible bill. And now you got that army of folks who habitually just love to say no to the people and to the environment.
Exactly what's been going on for the whole 10 years that we've been trying is we hear no a lot. And I'm at the point where I can barely hold in the frustration.
Mm-hmm.
This is an island county. The whole county is surrounded by water. And every county in Hawaii is the same, surrounded by water. There's no county on the mainland that's surrounded by water.
Right.
And yet, the proponents of this new 10-cent fee, like Surfrider, are saying, oh, but it works in Washington, D.C., or wherever it is. But the thing is that we're unique here,
mm-hmm.
being surrounded by water. Not only are we surrounded by water, but we have endangered and threatened species like monk seals, sea turtles. When you were talking before about plastic bags breaking into pieces, yes. And who eats that? Sea turtles eat it.
Mm-hmm.
And all of our sea turtles are either endangered or threatened. In particular, the leatherback sea turtle, and these types of sea turtles have been around since the age of the dinosaur.
Mm-hmm.
The leatherback, which is the largest sea turtle, may go extinct in our lifetime because of us, because of people using plastic bags, because those sea turtles, their major diet are jellyfish, and a plastic bag floating in the water looks like one, and that's what they're ingesting.
Yeah, you know, ironically, and what is painful to realize, you look at the mantra for the state, Malamaka Aina, we talk a good story, and we remind each other that this is a fragile, irreplaceable, rare, has the most endangered species in one given geographical location, and then we behave like bedbugs.
Mm.
You know, we're looking for the next person to come along and suck them dry of money, and we say, oh, we got a solution. Let's create a fund for that, or a bill that says you pay this amount for that. That's the limit of the environmental management that I've witnessed in this state for a long time. And when you look at the fragility of this situation and the environment here, you would think we would be setting
examples
for
right?
the world.
I mean,
yeah,
definitely. Where else do you find birds, beautiful colored with curved beaks that rely on nectar for food? And then the same people that have control over that and the welfare and well-being over that love to say no.
Mm-hmm.
That will hurt the businesses.
Well, look, here's the thing. All around the world, as I'm sure everybody knows, is the green movement.
Uh-huh.
And tourists are coming here to Hawaii basically for two things.
For the green.
They're coming here for the great weather, because it has the best weather on the planet.
Uh-huh.
And they're coming here for the environment, for the shoreline, for the beaches, for the surf, right? And so really, what those visitors are expecting, and we hear it from them all the time when we go out and do outreach, is they're upset when mm-hmm. they see all these plastic bags and all this styrofoam. I have visitors come and talk to me after they meet us, then they go to the Big Island, then they come back, and then they go, instead of telling me about how wonderful the volcano was and the forests and all this sort of thing, they just want to complain about the styrofoam because the Big Island is the styrofoam capital of America, I think it is. And anyway, it's just the people are expecting much more of Hawaii. They're expecting, like we were just talking about, Hawaii should be setting the example. Hawaii should be the leader. People think that Hawaii is already doing this, and then they get here and they're disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
And this is hurting the economy here. And really, I don't understand it, why we're not getting on top of this and we're not working hard on this. And this is the reason, one of the reasons why we're doing so much work on on identifying and getting information on marine debris so that we can put that out to not only the international community but also here locally at this at the local level and the state level and the national level so that we can get on this before it's too late.
Well, I'm hoping and that things will change, but I don't know how to get to the legislators. I mean, we have Mr. Gabbard, for example, and quite active in the vein of environmental things, but nothing's coming up, even when there seems to be a promise. I don't know what it's going to take, but when people flock to go to Lanikai Beach, they want to see the fish. They want to see the. They want to snorkel. They, you know, along the coast there, where the sea turtles there along Haleiwa side, they come to see that. The city and the state can't manage even the traffic to enhance that, right? You see the monk seals. They to the point where I believe what we're seeing with government management, this so-called group of people that are run out and put a rope around the monk seals. I believe, and this is my theory now, they piss people off so much, and but they get $283,000 for 3 years to go out and put a rope around the animal and tell people to say. But what I've observed is that they're so vociferous and disrespectful to people that I believe, and I have no science to this, but I've watched these people, I believe that this contributes, angers many of the people here, the way they react and the way they treat the people, beachgoers, that these people are frustrated and taking it out on the animals. I believe part, a portion of some of the death of these animals is stimulated by the treatment that NOAA has, a nonprofit organization who allows them to go out and muscle people around, if you ask me to describe it, yelling at them, filing TROs against citizens, calling the police for, you know, yelling comments like, get your black ass out of here, you know, for people being too close. This is the state of affairs with our management of natural resources and people.
Well, I don't think we can comment on that one because we specialize in marine debris and plastics, so I'll leave you with that one.
Well, it's still a problem. Whether we all could be silent, but the reality is we have animals that are dying.
Well, I will comment on.
That's really sad.
It's extremely sad, and well, we don't want to see that happen.
Not just sad. It's you're dealing with one of the most endangered marine mammals found in this state, and I would say
right. I mean, it's just,
I wouldn't place value on either to say plastics concern. So I want to say nothing to go and talk to the people and piss them off because I won't be able to go and count the plastic beads. You know, it's all related, and we're talking about government abuse of its authority and failure to deliver on behalf of the environment and the people. And you still can call them names and go out and pick plastics, but the point is, I use that as an example to say government is failing us when it comes to the environmental concerns. They talk a big talk, but don't walk that walk.
Well, that I can agree with you on is they are failing, and like I said, we wouldn't have even started this nonprofit if government had been doing its job. Because we did, in the end, find out whose responsibility it is. And it is the city's and the state's responsibility to keep those shorelines clear of plastic.
Well, I want to thank you, Suzanne, for coming in. And Dean, will you come back again?
We'd love to.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, let's do it again. We ran out of time, pretty much. So, but I enjoyed it and want to do it in the near future. And let's talk about bottle caps and recycling facilities and their indirect impacts on, like we discussed that one situation where they reject the bottles with caps, so the person run across the street, take the caps off, throw the caps down on the ground, and they find them way into the streams.
Yeah, well, thanks so much, Carol, for having us on your show. It was a pleasure to be here and have this discussion. Thank you.
Your website again, real quick. And
oh, yes, www.b-e-a-c-h.org.
All righty, and thank you, Dean.
Thank you, Carol.
I appreciate you guys coming. All righty, we'll talk again.
Aloha.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol.
In numbers too big to ignore, and I know too much to go back every day. Cause I heard it all before, and I've been down there on the floor. No one's ever gonna keep me down again. Oh, oh yes, I am wise, but it is wisdom born of pain. Yes, I paid the price, but look how much I gained. If I have to, I can do anything. I am strong, I am invincible, I am woman. Well, feet that fit so comfortably on your shoulders are the same ones that's kind of thin my ground, yeah. With all the muscles that you're building, you must be strong enough to lift your standard, make me want to hang around, yeah. Come here, but tell me what this is beyond all some kisses. Why you gotta turn my smile upside down, yeah. You used to say I was a blessing, no, you say I'm BMS, and so I guess there ain't no point hanging around, yeah. Well, I don't wanna be no guy, just wanna be appreciated by the high. Don't believe the package influence the contents. Tongue for tongue, I mean a lack of common sense. Who am I saying? I don't wanna be no guy, just wanna be respected by the eye. Don't let the style overshadow the credential. Me dress code, no diminish me potential. Who am I saying? Yeah, check it.
Alrighty. Okay, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show, and another beautiful day, as we say here. And I I want to thank Suzanne Fraser and Dean Otsuki for coming in with Beach and talking about the plastics. And now we have Miss Sharon Yarbrough and Mr. Tommy Yarbrough. And their organization, their Sisters Empowering Hawaii, and some interesting things recognizing women in the community and the hard work and the good work that women do. I know that, as James Brown said, this is a man world, but just remember that was just a song to get you to dance to. It's really a woman's world, because I can't do without asking smart people for information. So women, great contribution. So Sharon, thank you. And sounds like you got a really, this is the second annual. Let's pitch that first and then say hello to everybody. And
I want to say aloha to your listeners out there, Carol, and thank you for having Sisters Empowering Hawaii on. And yes, Sisters Empowering Hawaii is Hawaii's foremost women's empowerment organization. And what we do, we motivate, educate, and empower all women. And as you mentioned, Sunday, March 26th, we're having our second annual Women's Empowering event. And it's the second annual Women Making History Awards Celebration and Book Signing Luncheon, Sunday, March 26th.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, our theme is Redefining Standards, Making a Difference, and Inspiring Others.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very excited about this. And last year, you want to talk about the first annual a little bit?
Right, and some of the people that were recognized and given awards.
Absolutely. Our first annual was last year. It was on March 6th. And we had the privilege of honoring Vicki Holt Takamane, and we had a feature author, Deborah Pegay, who came in from Los Angeles, California, and she sold over a million copies of her book, Taming Your Tongue, or Taming the Tongue, I should say. And that was exciting. We had a lot of fun with her. And we were also honored to present a Crystal Award to Dr. Maya Satoru Ng, who is a professor at UH. And as we know her, she's also President Barack Obama's sister.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a lot of fun. And we cannot overlook and forget, you know, our military presence here. So we honored Colonel Salithia Abner Wise and Lori Chafin, who is all about, you know, health and wellness, and her book, Hawaii Wellness Magazine, we honored her. So that was a good piece for health. And last but not least, we honored Catherine John, who we all know is an advocate for sex trafficking that is happening not only here in Hawaii, but happening all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
So those were our recipients. Oh, I don't want to forget that we did give the civil rights attorney, Daphne Barbie Wooten, she received the Crystal Award of Civil Rights Attorney of the Year. And we can't forget that legal mm-hmm. aspect of
and she's been very active for some while here in the community.
That's correct.
On affirmative action and some other committees she sits on.
Well, she's the president of the African American Lawyers Association.
Mm-hmm.
And we also sit on the same board for the African American Film Festival. So she's a busy lady.
Mm-hmm. So when was the SEH Sisters Empowering Hawaii?
About 16 years ago. It took about 3 years to really get started.
Mm-hmm.
And how it became into its fruition, when I moved here 20 years ago, you know, Hawaii is a very unique place. And I said, well, I want to know where to get my hair and my nails, and what church am I able to attend?
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have family here, you just land here on the island and you don't know what to do. So I said, why don't I start a small group of women? At that time, I was the chief fundraiser at the American Red Cross, and I was able to meet so many wonderful people. And so I gathered the people that I met. We met for lunch, and I said, let's start a networking group.
Mm-hmm.
That way, when people come to Hawaii, they can call Sisters Empowering Hawaii and find out, okay, what gynecologist do I need to go to? What church do you recommend? Where's the best hairdresser mm-hmm. for our hair? Not everyone can do our hair, African-American hair, so you need to know the correct stylist to go to.
Mm-hmm.
So this is how Sisters in Hawaii, Hawaii was formed.
Mm-hmm. And that's critical because, as you say, some people have certain styles, and it may seem not important to a person like myself, but to get a hair style or done the proper way as they're usually having it done. And some people are not trained for that, the hair of African-American women.
Yeah, I found that out when I moved here, and I did go to a beauty salon, and they were very honest and wonderful, and he said, you know, we're not trained to do African-American women's hair. I can't do your hair.
Mm-hmm.
I said, oh, my goodness, what do I do? Fortunately, that same weekend when I arrived was during the African-American Martin Luther King.
Right.
The Martin Luther King celebration, and I was able to embrace the African-American families here, and received some wonderful referrals.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know to what degree you played in the role of putting together the film festival, the African American, there was a recent one, but
yes.
I was quite moved. I wanted to kick myself for not attending the others because I was quite moved and emotionally because seeing the movie, having the movie played, and great thanks to the James Baldwin there, but the museum leadership and working with you all to bring in issues of concern of African Americans. There was Black Lives Matter was
absolutely
there, and I'm Not Your Negro was a movie that was shown, and I thought it's about time that I felt that I was empowered. Just the fact that they were showing issues of concern that concerns us, that the rest of the world is faced with as well, but when we're more directly impacted. So my hat's off to all of you.
Oh, thank you. I did play a major role and have been playing a major role with the African American Film Festival, and it is a group of us. There is Marsha McFadden, retired judge Sandra Sims.
I was going to mention her. I wasn't going to go through the conversation without saying
absolutely. You know, it takes a village. You know that.
Yeah.
And, of course, there's the artist John Nichols.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, again, Daphne Barbie Wooten. And we all played a major role. And we have to give our hats off to Taylor Chang, who is the curator there at the Honolulu Museum of Art. And we appreciate them. And what I enjoyed about it, I was able to help bring in two co-founders from Black Lives Matter, mm-hmm. Alicia Garza and Patrice Colliers, and they mm-hmm. were just absolutely amazing. And we must say that it was a sold-out event, and this is our sixth annual. And we're looking forward to next year, and we hope that everyone comes out, because the first night, I think we showed I Am Not Your Negro,
mm-hmm.
Which was just fantastic. And we had wonderful music, great food. We had Jamaican food. Cheryl Graham
mm-hmm.
Was our special entertainer. It was just a wonderful time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Tommy?
The African American Film Festival has really been a plus in our community. And I'm very, very proud of Sharon for being part of it and all of the women that have participated. It's something to look forward to each year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the few events that all African Americans can come to and feel comfortable about being around other black people. Being in Hawaii, we see so few of each other, so few of us here.
Mm-hmm.
And when we first came here, there were a lot more African-Americans. Over the past 20 years, our community has dwindled down.
Really? And that's from unknown reasons or just deployment?
I think it's deployment. And we just want to, you know, thank our servicemen and servicewomen mm-hmm. for, you know, their duties here. And And, of course, Hawaii is different, and it's a little expensive here as well. And then people miss their families, too.
Yeah, well, yeah. Grandma, they won't get to see Grandma
exactly.
for the next 100 years. To get two of them on the plane now is...
And it's expensive
an
to come.
An arm and a leg. So
exactly.
they get there. Grandma, well, what happened? It cost me an arm and a leg to get here.
Exactly.
So, yeah, but... Sisters Empowering Hawaii, you're going to recognize, again, there's Zion, Mauna Lani, the names again.
Oh, from our past? From
no,
the
no,
first
this,
annual?
This one.
Oh, now our second annual Women Making History, our honorees will be Meliana Myers, and she is an artist, educator, and filmmaker. And we have Dr. Joanne Williams-Lazoya, and she is known nationally and internationally as one of the top emergency medicine doctors, physicians. Mm-hmm. And we have Brigadier General Suzanne Lum. And we have the Public Utilities Commission, mm-hmm. Commissioner Lorraine Akipa. And we are so excited this year to have a rising star, second-year law student Leslie Matthews. Mm-hmm. And we thought that was important to bring in our millennials. That's our next future. We need to, you know, prepare ourselves to pass the baton. So we are honoring her. And last but not least, we have a featured author who is Dr. Mauna Lani mm-hmm. Meyer. And she's also a professor at UH. Mm-hmm. So we're excited about honoring these women on Sunday, March 26th. It's at a country club. And it's just... a great investment.
At the Wailea Country Club.
Yes, it is. It is going to be at a country club in Kahala, mm-hmm. Right there on the ocean. And am I allowed to talk about the cost and all of that good things?
Yeah, that's why I invited you.
Thank you very much. I can't wait to get to that. All right, you know, some places have, you know, rules and regulations.
Well, we have rules and regulations. You have to say what's truthful.
Exactly. Well, what's truthful about this is $75 per person.
Okay.
And it's a great investment. And not only will you have a chance to network with like-minded people, this is not just for women. It's for men as well. Mm-hmm. Last year, men bought their daughters and sons, and it was just wonderful. Also, what's exciting about this, which really fits into our mission, Sisters Empowering Hawaii, when I say we educate people, we have partnered with Argosy University, and each attendee will receive a $5,000 scholarship mm-hmm. To attend Argosy University, and you can, you know, obtain your master's, your doctorate, and you have 2 years to use this scholarship, and it's non-transferable, so you know that. So now, let's go over the benefits. Not only do you have, for $75, your benefits and your advantages, you are with like-minded people. You hear these amazing women, six women, share their stories on their work. And then you have a delectable buffet luncheon. Mm-hmm. And you have a book signing, and she'll personally autograph the books. And then you have a $5,000 scholarship in your goodie bags.
Mm. In each bag.
In each bag. Each attendee.
Mm-hmm. So this program, what are some of the other programs, projects you have under the Sisters Empowering Hawaii? That outreach, do you tutor, do you reach out and mentor kids or young ladies or children? Or what? Tell us some more about SEH.
Oh, I would love to. One of the things that project that we're proud of at Valentine's Day for Hawaii veterans, mm-hmm. where this is our fifth year that we go to Tripler, Sisters Empowering Hawaii, and the ladies dress up in red. And each year we have given out, you know, hundreds of bags to Hawaii veterans on Valentine's mm-hmm. Day. Mm-hmm. And that has been one of the most rewarding projects that we're involved in. And constantly we're doing book signings. And some of our past events we've had, not only for the Valentine's Day for veterans, this is what we do annually. This year we did take a break because not only was I involved in the film festival, But putting on this event for our second annual is a huge undertaking. And I'm a very small organization. I have a vice president, June Elizabeth Dennis, who lives in Los Angeles, and she will be here also. I do have a nice advisory board, which I have one here, my husband, mm-hmm. Tommy Yarbrough. But from some of our past events, we've held numerous book signings, and one was Daily Cornbread, 365 Secrets for a Healthy Mind, Body, and Soul by author Stephanie Stokes Oliver. As a matter of fact, she's the sister of Andre Wooten, one of the mm-hmm. attorneys here in Honolulu. And we had the From Rags to Riches was a seminar featuring Barbara Mitchell. And she's an entrepreneur, the first African-American woman to work with an oil company. You know those huge tanks? Yeah, gas tanks. Mm-hmm. Well, she's the first African-American in Chicago to own this type of company where the oil trucks come up and refill to the gasoline.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've done a lot of things. We've had It's Hot in Here, where keynote speakers have been Emmy Timimbong, and as you know, she's a veteran broadcaster in radio and television. And Dr. Shamer, a professor and vice chair of Department of Gynecology at the University of Hawaii. So we've done just some amazing things. I could just go on and on and on mm-hmm. over the years of the different events we've held.
Mm-hmm. So you are looking, this is March 26th.
Sunday, March 26th is from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Mm-hmm. Now, any other veteran programs you work with or anything that, like the Valentine's Day one you mentioned for you?
That's the main one. I've worked with Mo's Heroes, Mo's Heroes, And that was interesting. And also, as my husband reminded me, that we received years ago a proclamation from Governor Linda Lingle, and every November 6th is Stop Domestic Violence Against Women and Children Day. And that has been very dear to my heart, and I think that I think that's something that we sweep under the rug about the domestic violence that goes on, not only just here, but everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So we do work with some of the shelters and help raise monies for them, and we've donated quite a bit to the various organizations regarding domestic violence.
Let's talk a bit about domestic violence and what how bad is it here? I mean, one is too many.
Exactly.
But and is there anything really good programs or projects that a listener out there suffering from?
Someone said on the radio that there are like 500 incidents every day of domestic violence here in Hawaii. And part of the reason is the various cultures. We have this melting pot of people coming from Micronesia, from Samoa and Fiji, and they come to the United States, and it's a big culture shock.
Mm-hmm.
And it's frustrating because they don't know what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And so it does develop a lot of domestic violence here.
But, I mean, across the board, there is an issue. 500 cases that, I don't know. I'm pretty sure when you look at the number of Micronesians, it would be small compared to the total population. But what?
It's everybody.
Yeah. What do you suggest to them, a young lady or young man? I mean, I was reading one article on abuse, and you know, it says there was a couple of men had foul complaints or seeking protection.
Absolutely.
So it could happen across the board. But my question is that does your organization work with that? Will you be working with them? If you know, what kind of activities and how outreach for that? And can people call you? Or will you be able, for example, where do I get a nice haircut with my kind of hair? You know, are you able to suggest to them a good counsel, a good...
Absolutely. We have various counselors that I could recommend them to. And I would say to the men and women, you know, domestic violence is not just someone hitting you. The scars with the verbal abuse can last longer than the physical abuse. Mm-hmm. And I would suggest to that man or woman, you know, the first time they're screaming and raising their voice at you and belittling you, that's a red flag, because next comes the physical part. And feel free, they can reach out to me at sistersempoweringhawaii@gmail.com, and I can definitely refer them to various organizations. We're constantly collecting clothes and shoes, because remember, when a woman or man is abused, they're not able to go back home. They don't have, if you don't have family here, you're not able to go back to your family and find a place. So they do have shelters here, and you know, if they're willing to call me, I can give them that information. But the shelters, they leave with what's on their backs. So we collect, we give them food, we help give them shoes and clothing so they can carry on. And a lot of them even need help with, they weren't working at that time, so they need help with someone helping them with their resumes. We even also help with that to get them back into the job market. And refer them to various churches also have their doors open. I know our church is one. We have Family Promise at the Honolulu Central Seventh-day Adventist Church, where they come to our church, and we once a month, they come for the entire weekend, and they're able to stay and eat and sleep. So there's so much. What I love about Hawaii that I refer to this place as the bus stop to Hawaii, to bus stop to heaven. We have this beautiful sunshine. There's so many amazing, warm people that have their arms open. You just have to know where to go.
Now, your honorees, in picking honorees, how do you pick them? And can one nominate someone? Can you walk us through how you choose or how you select? Or how does one show up on your radar to be even considered?
Absolutely. That's a great question, Carol. There is a process we go to, and absolutely, yes, someone can refer someone. As a matter of fact, Dr. Maya Satora Ng last year was our Global Peace and Social Justice honoree, and I said, we want to continue this for next year, and will you refer someone to me? And she said, absolutely. I have the perfect person for you in mind. And so that was Meliana Meyer. So she was referred. And so I said, well, last year we honored an attorney. And I don't want to honor an attorney this year. I would like to honor an attorney, but someone who has taken another step, who's changed careers. So I met with one of the partners at Carl Smith Ball, Gerald Samita, and we had lunch together, and he gave me a few names. And, of course, Lorraine Akiba's name came up, as at one time, Lorraine Akiba, she worked for McAllister, McCabe, I think, with that law firm. And as a matter of fact, Brigadier General attended the first annual. And her friend Jean Schultz was the one that did bring her as a guest. And I was at a retiring party, and there was another general there. And he said, tell me about yourself. What do you do? McMahon is his name. McKeenan. Sorry, excuse me, is his name, Brigadier General. And I said, I want to honor one of your top women in the military. He said, I have the perfect person for you. So she came highly recommended. And as far as I wanted to bring the medical aspect into this one, because I did not last year, Dr. Joanne Williams-Lazoya, who's known nationally, internationally recognized speaker on emergency medicine, trauma, resuscitation, and critical care topics, she has been a friend of mine for over 40 years, and she lives in Los Angeles. And I said, this is a time that I want to honor my girlfriend, because I feel a lot of times women are overlooked and undervalued. And this was my opportunity to honor her. And, of course, we're doing the book signing. And I said, well, we need someone locally, because last time we had someone from Los Angeles. And Meliana Meyer said, I have the perfect person. Of course, she recommended her sister, Dr. Manulani Meyer. She's Director of Indigenous Education at University of Hawaii, West Oahu. And Dr. Meyer is an internationally recognized keynote speaker and has published on the topic of Native intelligence and linkages to quantum sciences and transformational and whole thinking and to liberating evaluation. So she sounded so interesting that, yes, we wanted to bring her on board. And the last one, Leslie Matthews, she attended, I met her at the African American last year, the fifth annual film festival. And I just started watching her. You know, this, I tell the young people, be careful what you put on Facebook. But she's an advocate. Also, she's an advocate and two-time graduate student scholarship recipient. And she's a member of the Phi Alpha Honor Society for Social Work. And I said, this is someone that we would like to recognize for sure. Mm-hmm. So this is how it all came about.
And then there's is it possible that you'll be recognizing, let's say, a woman in the community that just does not have the degrees or what have you that contribute to the community efforts or something of that nature? How does, if someone were to observe or know or become familiar with someone of that stature or that activities, would they be able to, would you consider them as well?
Absolutely. This is for all women. As a matter of fact, we've already started receiving, I'm getting emails as we speak, that people are already, they say, Sharon, this would be the perfect person for you, and they would send me the information about her. And, you know, we have to realize that if you look at the people who have really have accomplished a lot of things, they don't have all of these degrees and these top prestigious accolades. These are people who are passionate about what they do and about the work that they do. And these are the type of women that we're looking for.
That's great. Well, I don't know what you want to talk about, but there were a number of things I was quite curious about as to, do you have regular meetings or occasionally, and then can people participate in those meetings? And building your support or rallying. And again, I encourage you, fundraising. You can even start now. Do you give your address, phone number, how you can receive, one can donate to your calls, not just for the gathering on the 26th.
Absolutely.
March. So go ahead and feel free to.
Sure, sure. And we also, I want to speak about, when you were talking about donations. Even if you're not able to attend, I tell people when they say, you know, Sharon, we're going to be out of town, I encourage people to pay it forward. There are breast cancer survivors who want to attend, and the medication is so expensive and that they want to. So people are sending me checks to 1515 Nu'u'anu Avenue. That's N as in Nancy, U-U-A-N-U Avenue, number 163. That's Honolulu, Hawaii, 96817. And they're donating to Sisters Empowering Hawaii for the domestic violence women or men who want to attend who are unable to. So you just, you know, write a check to Sisters Empowering Hawaii for $75 and send it to us and mark it as a donation for, you know, whomever. I know many people who would like to attend this event who are unable to. So throughout the year, we're constantly asking for people to participate because, you know, Sisters Empowering Hawaii offers a platform to interact with organizations from the business and financial community who are committed to create and support solutions. So through the year, we have networking events. We held one this past summer at the Honolulu Design Center where it was entitled Don't Lose Your Steam. And this is when we had inauguration for June Dennis, who is our vice president now. But we were so honored to have as our guest speaker Ann Marotta. And Ann Marotta is she works for the Pacific Aviation Museum, and she was voted the marketing genius of Hawaii. And she
because of her work with the Aviation Museum, they did an awesome job. I went out there way back when it was just starting up. And
did you go to the lab?
No, I didn't, but I was just really impressed, still impressed with what they did then and the displays and the incorporating the airplanes and the it's a class act.
It is a class act, and we were so fortunate to be this year. They had an Amarad and her team did the for Black History Month. They did bring in a colonel, one of the remaining Tuskegee Airmen, and he was absolutely amazing in his 90s, and he was vibrant. And the takeaway from this event. From the colonel, and I am just so sorry his name escapes me, but I do. My guest for Valentine's Day for Veteran was retired Colonel Alexander Jefferson, and he's a friend of his. My takeaway from this previous event, he said, is all about attitude.
Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Jefferson, the book Red Tail Captured, Red Tail Free, Memoirs of a Tuskegee Airman, Prisoner of War in Germany for 9 months, $32. Contact me, 18126 Brinkers Street, Detroit, Michigan, 48234, or call me, 313-368-0674. Thank you.
That's giving me, what did they say, chicken skin? He is amazing. He was my guest speaker twice for the Valentine's Day for Hawaii veterans. Mm-hmm. And what a remarkable man. What remarkable stories he has to tell. And I would encourage everyone to purchase his book.
You know, I'm he's been on the show quite a bit, and Holloman also but and some other that was. Here visiting on occasion. Each year they would come.
Yes.
I was moved. Very rarely am I. I'm not impressed. I wouldn't chase down the president for an autograph, or something like that. Now Reagan, I was impressed with his demeanor and all, and just
Well, he was an actor first. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but he just had something going on. Mm. I wish I had his autograph, but. I was moved when I met these gentlemen. These are Tuskegee Airmen.
Ooh. And to hear their
and
stories.
The history and then to be able to hear it firsthand and hear that. And then the other, and anybody else, and then I met Tom Bradley, the mayor of
Los Angeles. That's where we're from. I was at his home many times.
And I'm not really into, what do you call that when a guy...
You're not a groupie.
Yeah, not a groupie.
You're not a groupie. We're from L.A. We know those terms.
But I just got out of the Army, and I was able to meet him and shake his hand and talk to him for some while. And I was really, I thought, now that's motivation, So, and the same thing.
Tom Bradley?
Right, Tom Bradley.
Yes, Mayor Bradley, my husband and I are from Los Angeles. We moved here from Los Angeles, and his lovely wife would have wonderful teas at their home. Mm. I mean, it's just like our president opened up the White House. It's for the people. That's how
was for
Bradley,
the, it was.
Was. Was. Okay, but I'm going to leave that alone.
I said that. You didn't. Said, Sisters in Power in Hawaii had nothing to do with that statement.
Thank
Carol
you.
Carol Cox owns it and said it.
I love that. Man up. But Mayor Bradley would open up his home for the people.
Yeah.
And I was able to meet Senator Dianne Watson and Congresswoman Maxine Waters. And anyone was invited. You could come and their beautiful home where you would sit outside under the trees and have tea and wonderful cucumber sandwiches. So you're right. He's absolutely a remarkable man.
And I raise this, take the conversation this way, because while it may seem odd as an oddball effort on the part of some may argue, well, why have sisters going to sound like just recognizing women? Well, there are factions out there, and just the natural process of attrition works against women.
Mm.
And we see that now It's yes. more prevalent. And so every little bit helps. Your efforts in recognizing and elevating women up and publicly, you know, proclaiming their accomplishments and identifying them and recognizing them, because there are many out there now not willing to recognize anything but themselves and their own agenda and their political, you know, motivations. So
you know,
I applaud you.
Thank you very much. As I mentioned earlier, I do feel that women are overlooked and undervalued. And I always remember something that my mother told me many, many, many years ago. She said that I have a brother, well, he's passed now, and sister was three of us. My father was a minister, my mother a school teacher, and later on a principal. And she said that you are special to us. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times that people feel they're entitled, and I'm this, and I'm so and so. No. Everyone is special. And no matter what you do, I mean, I look at the people who are, that we don't speak to or recognize, the janitors who keep our places clean, mm-hmm. The people, the window washers. I watch the women police women who are directing traffic and keeping us safe. I mean, we have such a broad spectrum of women who are doing remarkable things that are for all people.
Mm-hmm. And we have to make those contributions. And they say it's a village.
It takes a village.
But, you know, and many of us still do, and I do, think that, you know, we didn't inherit, you know, the earth. We didn't inherit it.
No.
What we did, we inherited the future of our children.
Mm.
That's what we're responsible for. You know, and so the reason I ask you about I'm careful to say common person, because Fannie Lou Hamer, Miss Fannie Lou Hamer, mm-hmm. I'm from Cleveland, Mississippi.
Oh.
And she lived, that would be about from here to, from the studio here to Pearl City, from the distance we lived in.
Sure.
And she had a nice co-op, a garden that she advocated. And look what the effort and just what was her scholarships and degrees, and she contributed, immeasurably. Hold on. Caller, thank you for calling. Go ahead with your comment or question.
Good morning, Carol. Thank you so much for your good work. I just want to announce that the mayor is going to get a 5% increase in pay unless Hawaii speaks out. There's going to be a public hearing on March 21st, Tuesday, at 1:30 when everybody's working. Just wanted to pass it on to you. It was in yesterday's paper. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you. All righty.
He needs a raise, right? He gets $200,000.
Carla, thank you for calling. Go ahead with your comment or question.
Yeah, I just want to comment on the fact that you spoke about inheriting your children and not inheriting the earth. I think the biggest disconnect of all is being disconnected from our ancestors. That's just mm-hmm. my thought. I wanted to share that with you guys. I think that was the greatest crime of slavery, was that our ancestral connection was obliterated. I just want to hear what you guys got to say about that.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, but what your work is doing now, recognizing all of us, because now we used to be individuals and ethnic groups.
Mm-hmm.
Now
mm-hmm.
we're one big bowl of soup.
Yeah.
And all of us bring our own flavorings. You know, little ginger here, a little pepper there, a little salt there, and that's what the world is moving forward. That's what we are. And yes, we had slavery, and yes, look at me, I'm sitting here half yellow, half black, but I don't want to go back, you see. So, but that's, with your organization, I mean, reaching out across mm-hmm. the lands and identifying everyone that is making contributions is what's noticeable, what should be noted.
Well, I would, you know, illustrate again that Sisters Empowering Hawaii is dedicated to the motivation, advancement, education, and empowerment of all women in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And we also are providing opportunities for women to change careers, continuation for graduate degrees, and introduce them to women of accomplishment who have achieved success in their their chosen profession. So this organization, and it's, and I also want to let people know, Carol, this is not a membership. Mm-hmm. We have enough, you know, we work every day. We have that responsibilities. There are other sororities that you can join and be a member of. This is an organization that is open for everyone. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to, I think that we have enough on our plate. Say we come to this meeting at this time and this dues are due. Just open up and come and fellowship, have a wonderful time, and just enjoy yourself. Mm-hmm. This is what we're all about.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I said it earlier, and I was, I do want to kick myself in the pants on the African American Film Festival, mm-hmm. because I guess in its youth, I wasn't that, but I want to hearken back to the way the director, what was her name again?
Taylor Chang.
When she stood up there and made that announcement and made the presentation and introduction, I felt that it was genuine.
Yes.
I didn't feel, well, I'm just doing this because we just needed something to fill the...
No, we work hard.
and I was, so I'll be back.
Thank you. And I think we should come in on your show next year. Or maybe before, and talk about what we're doing and let the people know. Talk about what the Honolulu African American Film Festival is doing. And I forgot to mention also one other member, Tadia Rice. She's also on the committee, the Film Festival Committee. And we want to thank the Honolulu Museum in, you know, believing in our vision and mm-hmm. in our mission mm-hmm. for this, because it's definitely needed. And it's for everyone.
Well, yeah, and I've often tried to point out and remind people that while we may refer to it as the African-American experience, we're all subjected to that experience, whether you are from Indonesia, from Micronesia, Japan, or
Samoa.
Our history shows that, so we must be forever reminded of that and work together as a community, period. And recognizing one another, acknowledging and appreciating each other.
It's been inclusive.
Yeah.
We don't want exclusive. We want inclusiveness.
No, it's boring. I can you imagine living life without some Thai food?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Don't get us talking about food. We just had a wonderful
Can you imagine,
Mexican food.
Yeah,
you know?
Korean food, Chinese food. Can you imagine living life without that?
No, I cannot imagine living life without all of the people that I've met various ethnic backgrounds. It's just like baking a cake. You need flour, you need eggs, you need sugar, you know, and then put a little chocolate, a little syrup in there.
Or some strawberry or coconut.
Exactly, exactly.
But the point is that if we adopt that mindset going forward, no matter what people throw at all of us, we'll weather the storm.
Exactly. And for Sisters Empowering Hawaii, I would like to add is our goal is to raise identity awareness through cultural, historical, and educational activities. Mm-hmm. And we provide information to help women enter or transfer into new careers and build one-to-one mentoring relationships for women with spiritual enhancement as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, anything else that you want? Again,
well,
give that data.
Well, we could talk here for everything, but I would ask everyone to immediately, because we're almost sold out. Mm-hmm. The event is Sunday, March 26th, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. It's at a country club in Kahala. And please feel free to call me at 808-599-2998. And you can also email me at sistersempoweringhawaii@gmail.com. And it's $75 per person, and you also get a $5,000 scholarship from Argosy University. And we, the goodie bags are almost as good as the Oscar bags. I mean, Starbucks has added things in. I've met with the Chamber of Commerce to get information. You will have a wonderful time. So I ask people to please come out. On Sunday, March 26th, and just have a good old time.
Now, all of the nominees or honorees going to be present?
Yes. They will receive crystal awards, as a matter of fact, and we're excited about that. Also, I need to add that Tiffany's and Ala Moana has given a special gift to each honoree.
Mm.
Yeah.
So will they be available for to talk to young ladies or other women? Are they making themselves available? Is there another date? Is just this one event?
You know, I'm so glad that you brought that up. When we had our first and second meetings, we have them at Meliana's home. These women are so amazing. When they came together, immediately they started talking about moving forward, what we're going to do, how we're going to have something else for the women and men, and so we can talk story with them. And they started talking about the different camps that they want me to come to. I mean, they're putting me to work already.
Right? Yeah, because this is inspiring. I mean, I'd like to meet them all, but you know, when
you're coming, aren't you?
Leslie Matthews.
Oh, she's wonderful. Leslie Matthews is a Leslie. I'm not sure. She's a young woman. You know, I'm not sure what her age is. But as I was saying, she attends current second year law student at William S. Richardson School of Law, University of Hawaii. She currently serves as a Western Regional Chair of the National Black Law Students Association. Mm. And I did see on her Facebook page that they received an award, the National Black Law Students Association.
Yeah,
so she'll be available for sure.
And then there's Joanne Williams, Lazoya, emergency room. I was thinking, boy, wouldn't it be nice if that was, or maybe you already set it up where young ladies and young men can meet these people.
Well, you know, she lives in Los Angeles. She's coming in on Thursday, the Thursday before the event. And so, you know, I gave you my phone number, and if you, any residents or medical students that would like to meet with her or chat with her before the event, she is coming in on Thursday before the event. And I also like to add that she's a founding member and fellow of the American Academy of Emergency Medicine, diplomat of the American Board of Emergency Medicine, past chair of the emergency medicine section of the National Medical Association. My God, you know, the National Medical Association, NMA, they come here every 5 years. And if people don't know who they are about 5,000 black physicians come every 5 years. But, yeah, come on out. She's also an AKA. So you AKAs, come on out and see Dr. Joanne Williams-Lazoya.
All righty. Well, thank you for joining me.
Oh,
and
thank you.
I hope it helps,
so
and I appreciate all that you're working, Sharon and Tommy Yarbrough, and if you want to come back again, give us a call. Oh, let me give you this proclamation, the one you gave me here.
Yes.
The Senate honors and celebrates Sisters Empowering Hawaii. You received this back in Linda Lingle.
No, that's from Senator Willis Sparrow.
Oh, okay. This is the recent one. You mentioned
that was last year.
Oh, okay.
Yes, and we also, you know, Maisie Hirono has also given the ladies the proclamations as well.
So we should be calling Senator Sparrow, Lieutenant Governor Sparrow soon.
I hope so. That's our friend. And he works hard for the people.
I'm for other people out there, he's supportive of the African American community. I see him at darn near everything, and I mean, so you know. So anyway, but I think he's gonna. We'll go and beg him. Hey, why don't you run for lieutenant governor?
Okay, I'm gonna call him as soon as we leave.
Okay, and tell him that he's been nominated.
I'm with you on that.
All righty. Well, thank you, guys. I appreciate
thank you
coming
Carol.
In.
Thank you, Carol. This has been all right. fun.
All righty.
Aloha. Aloha.
That was so nice, Carol.
Looking out on the morning rain. I used to feel so uninspired.
Yeah.
And when I knew I had to face another day, Lord, it made me feel so tired. Before the day I met you, life was so unkind. You're the key to my peace of mind. So you make me feel.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.